God shake the truth out of me. I'm Marcia, and I'm an alcoholic. A grateful one, to say the least. And Happy New Year, everybody. My sobriety date is August 17th, 2004. I'm not a first-time winner. What it was like. Well, I was born here in Tampa. And when I was about 6 years old, my parents divorced, and my mother whisked us out of school. Next thing you know, we're in New Jersey. So my school year was up north. My summers were down here with my dad and my stepmom. I am the youngest of 10. I have 9 older brothers and sisters. We either have the same mother or we have the same father. A lot of issues in my family. We were like the Brady Bunch on steroids with dysfunction. I have no idea how my parents got together. My dad is a Florida cracker. I love him with all my heart. But he was a mean. He was mean and he was angry and he was a dry drunk. My mom was a San Francisco socialite. And then you get me. I always loved my dad. We were close. Everybody would say, oh, you're just like daddy. And I have to remember that. You know, when we moved to New Jersey, it was like I was in a whole different culture. Because Florida and New Jersey are two different places. And my mother brought us and dropped us off at our grandparents' house. I knew my grandparents, but not that well. Not well enough to be at their house because they always came down here. And I was scared. And I was like, I want my dad. And I just felt lost. And it's important that I share that because that was the beginning. And that stuff is important, especially as an alcoholic. So anyway, I was about 11 years old. I picked up my first drink, vodka and orange juice, a joint, and a cigarette. And I was off to the races. And back then, that's what we did, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Everybody, you know, everybody equal rights, you know, Martin Luther King was murdered, Robert Kennedy, the whole bit. And I mean, in some ways, it was a good era to grow up in because it woke everybody up. And I feel fortunate in that way. But the pain was so bad with all the abuses that happened. When I found alcohol, it took it all away. And I became the wild child. I learned to be tough. I grew up in a tough neighborhood. Even in Florida, it was tough. And my mother, she ended up marrying a priest. He left the priesthood. He was pretty well known in Tampa, too. Read between the lines. I don't think he married my mother for her. He married my mother for her daughters. And that really screwed me up. Screwed up my other sister, where we have the same set of parents, and she's still in denial. Me, I opened up my mouth, and I said, this is what happened, and I was told that I was a liar, I was crazy, and I was looking for attention. My one sister, Karen, believed me, and from then on, I was protected as best as she could, and I knew. But that scarred me. That changed my whole life. So when I picked up alcohol, I was off to the races. It had its twists and turns. I mean, we all drank, drugged, and everything else. And I got along with everybody. I just got by with school. I really didn't care, but I thought I was smarter than I was. I just wanted to get high, be creative, you know, meet God, get into the mountains, you know, whatever. Just did not want to be in reality at all. So anyway, I got married eventually. I think it was 21. God, here I am all over the place. I was about 14 years old, and a really good friend of my sister's, who was like a family friend, she died from this disease. And it really had an effect on me. And the abuse was continuing, and I just couldn't take it anymore. So much loss. So I tried to kill myself. Next thing I know, I'm at Fair Oaks Hospital in Summit on the adolescent unit. And even though I didn't have memory then, because the memories didn't come back until I was older, that psychiatrist knew that something had happened. And that my dad and stepdad was confronted, and so was my mom. So now, what do you do with Marcia? They're getting divorced. That Christmas, he comes to see me with my Christmas presents. He goes, well, your mother and I are getting a divorce, and it's all your fault. I'm like, okay, didn't know I was that powerful. And next thing you know, I'm in Salem, Oregon. I'm in a whole other different culture. Because I'm used to integration, I'm used to the city, you know, I'm used to all that. Now here I am in a upper middle class, predominantly white neighborhood, and I do not fit in at all. And so I just said to my uncle after being there about 6 months, I said, you have two choices. You either fly me back to New Jersey or I'm hitchhiking. And that's the kind of kid I was. I would have hitchhiked. I wanted out. I just wanted to be back with my people. Well, I got back, and the drinking and the drugging kept going, and I was at peace. I was okay. Went to school, didn't graduate, but I did get my GED. I met my first husband when I was 16. He drank and drugged just like I did, and all of our friends did. You know, you'd have keg parties out in the woods, had the neighborhood bar. I mean, I was drinking in there from when I was like 16 years old. I think the time drinking age was 18. Just when I turned 21, then it changed to 21. I was like, wow. But that's what we did, and that was normal. And I didn't think there was anything wrong with it, because I'm perfect. I'm good. I have some issues. Yeah, I admit that, but I'm good. So we get married. Well, actually, before we got married, I was kind of a little uncomfortable being in New Jersey. I just felt like I was at a dead end. And I said, well, maybe I need to go back to Florida. So I called my dad. I said, I want to come back. He said, okay, so I come back to Tampa. Now, mind you, I am at the bars doing whatever, whenever I want, independent. So I come back to say at my dad's. He goes, you're going to beauty school, and you have to be in bed by 9 o'clock. What the fuck? I call my sister Karen. She lives in Miami. She was assistant dock master at Dinner Key Marina in Coconut Grove. I said, can I come down there? Oh, yeah, come on. Oh, my God, I had arrived. I was so happy. This was in 1981? Yeah, 81. Woo! Dom Perignon and cocaine. I didn't have to pay for it. It got crazy. It was fun. It was fun. So I had a really good job in the radio station and accounts payable. Up and coming, little yuppie, right? But at night and on the weekends, that was a whole different story. I was a criminal. I've done a lot of prison commitments. I say, you know what? I just didn't get caught. I didn't get DUIs. Cops would escort me home, you know? But they knew me. They knew the family. So I was like, yeah, let's just take her home. I was very fortunate, very lucky. And that's God looking out for me. So anyway, it got a little too crazy because Reagan was president and you didn't know who you could trust and what was going on. And the Colombians were coming in. The Haitians were coming in. Cuba had just let out a whole bunch of criminals out of the prison system. They're all coming in South Florida. It was getting crazy. So Bill asked me to marry him, and I looked at my sister. I said, what should I do? She goes, you're kind of out of control. You might want to go back to New Jersey. Get married. Settle down. Okay, sounds like a good idea. I got married. What the hell is being in love and all that? I didn't know. I didn't have any good teachers, trust me. So we got married, but he was my best friend. So I figured, okay, we'll make it work. And I loved pot. And I loved to have my vodka. I was okay to drink, but no, you can't smoke pot. All of a sudden, this wild, crazy man got conservative. No pot, okay. So I already learned how to, I already knew how to manipulate, so I'm having these panic attacks. Go to the doctors. And of course, it's his fault. It's the way I'm living. So I get Valium. Okay, that works, so I'm off to the races with that. But every time we got together with our friends, it was always a big party, wanted to cook this or that. We'd go up to the bathroom, because some of us had kids. I had kids already, and they had kids, so we'd make sure the kids wouldn't see it. And we would just do our thing and have kegs in the backyard. Who does that? That is so insane. So anyway, my dad got really sick. This was in 91. And my brother calls me, he goes, Dad's up in Morton Plant, and he cannot make it. So I get down here right away, I go see him. And I thought he was going to live, but he ended up dying the next morning. Well, I finished off his booze in his closet. Literally, he was a closet drinker. And between my sister Karen and I, we finished it all off. And that's when I crossed over that invisible line of sane drinking to alcoholic drinking. I was drinking so much and popping pills like crazy, I didn't even realize how much I was doing. Within like actually, it was October of 92. I hit a bottom. I was dying. I was physically dying. But keep in mind, I was going to Al-Anon. I knew there was a problem somewhere, but it wasn't me. I'm not the alcoholic. I really did not want to be an alcoholic. I'd rather have had schizophrenia, psychotic, whatever. But I don't want to be an alcoholic. That's my best friend. That's what got me through everything, you know? So anyway, my husband at the time, he got sick with, he started bleeding out. We're both sick. He ends up in ICU. I go to check on him. My neighbor's sitting with my three kids. And the doctor looks at me and says, your husband's in here and he may not live because of Budweiser. And he took a look at me, and looking at you, I should probably put you in the bed next to him. I said, you can't, I got three toddlers at home. So I go through. But the good wife that I am, and the Al-Anoner, I bottom line of me of all people. I was probably worse drunk than he was. That's it, we're not gonna do this anymore. You gotta go to rehab. If you don't, I'm changing the locks and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, ladies, let me tell you, came back to bite me. So we all go to Carrier Foundation in Belmead, and they have a great program for the kids. Thank God, Bright Futures for Kids. That saved my kids, saved them from me and their dad. And a program for Bill, and then I went into the spousal program. I go in there one day, none of the wives are there, it's just me and the counselor. She tossed at me. Told her my whole story. She said, look, just go to 6 AA meetings. If you don't like it, you don't ever have to go back. Okay. So I show up at the Allian Club in Trenton, New Jersey. I walk in. There's a man by the name of Tommy Bull. He took me by the hand. He was rough, trust me. But they were, I tell you, I love those guys. God rest their souls. He said, honey, just come on, sit down next to me. And back then, if you were new, you didn't say a word. You took the cotton out your ears, you put it in your mouth, and you sit down. And I had no problem with that. I was holding on. I wasn't drinking anymore, but I was detoxing off the pills. Ugh. If I could redo it again, I would do the opposite, okay? It was rough, and I was scared. I was confused. But when I came in and I listened, I resonated. I said, ooh, that's how I feel. That makes sense. So I kept coming back, and then I joined the women's meeting. And I took off with Alcoholics Anonymous. I was Miss AA. I worked the steps, did intergroup commitments, prison commitments, detoxes, 12-step calls. I mean, we had some crazy 12-step calls in the city back then. And went through some really rough neighborhoods. I mean, it was like, whew, that was Miss AA. Everything was good. And I had all those issues that I'm talking about. Never address them, just kept shoving them down. But just go to meetings. Just don't drink, go to meetings. Guys, I'm this drunk. Now I need to get that shovel out and start shoveling that crap. Because if I don't, I'm gonna die. And I will drink again. And that's for me. So I was almost 7 years, and I had this bright idea. You know, I'm really not in love with this man, even though he's the father of my children and we have the house and this and that. I can't live this lie, so I justified getting divorced. And I'm an easy one to divorce, so I was fair. We'll just split everything 50-50, share joint custody, blah, 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 and all that. So that's what we did. Then I met the man of my dreams. He had two Harleys. And he had his own business, and we lived houses, and I learned a lot from him, too. Then we ended up buying a farm on the Eastern Shore of Virginia with 32 acres. So I had my horse, I had my... We had chickens, we had two sheep, the horse would attack the sheep, and I'd go out there and play with them. I mean, I had a horse actually come to the kitchen window, like, come on, let's go, and I'm like, all right. It was pretty cool, and I was happy. But I relapsed, and then it got real ugly, and I became somebody I didn't even know. I hit a darkness like I wouldn't wish on my worst enemies. It was violent. Yeah, there were a couple of gangs involved here and there, you know. Guns, you know, all that good stuff. And, I mean, I had my face bashed into the wall. My sister came over, she said, oh, you literally rearranged your face, didn't you? I said, yeah. And she goes, who are you? What the hell? But all that shame and all that crap that happened to me as a kid, I wasn't enough. I wasn't worthy. I was shame. I was no good. And that's what I truly believed all those years. It took me 4 years to get back into these rooms. I would go to meetings, pick up a white chip. I so wanted it. And I realized the first time around is a gift. Second time around, it's like I slapped God in the face. And I had to earn it. And so I wanted to come back home to Florida, so I went to Spencer Recovery. My second husband went to jail. I went to rehab. That was a trip. But I tell you what, step one, the minute you were powerless over alcohol, it took me a long time to really get that. Unmanageability? Yeah, I got that. I get that. My life is unmanageable. It can still be unmanageable today if I let it. But I've learned, I've been taught not how to let that happen today. Step two, came to believe a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity. You know what? I really don't have a problem with a higher power and with my God as I understand Him. Because even when I was a little girl, as early as I can remember, I never felt alone. I always felt a presence with me. And today I can tell you that is my higher power that was looking out for me and protecting me all through everything. And that there are no coincidences, and I have no regrets. So anyway, I get sober again, so my sobriety day again is, like I said, August 17th. And I did not want to drink, but my body had other plans. And then when I did drink, I couldn't even catch a buzz. I mean, it was frustrating. I mean, it was like, what the hell? So my girlfriend, my roommate actually, we go to the movie theater in St. Pete. They got a freaking bar in there with the neon lights. And I'm like, okay, really? I was like, we gotta get out of here, let's go. So then we go out on the beach and just breathe like you saw and all that shit. I was there like a month, and then it's like, no, I'm not ready to go. I gotta stay another month. I chose to stay there for 3 months because I couldn't trust myself. And then I go to Brian Pass. I don't know if some of you may know Brian. He died a couple years ago. I knew him from Jersey. He grew up with my second husband. I walk in, and I'm so paranoid. I'm like, oh, so he called you from prison, so now you're here? I knew he was in Tampa somewhere. I had no idea it was St. Pete. He's like, Marshall, what the hell happened to you? I don't know. I just know I'm a hot mess. My heart's broken. I don't know. I don't know. So one day at a time. And I tell you what, I've met a lot of good people. I've met some really strong men, Shooter Dave, Bruce, those two men, and they passed away. I'm still grieving. I don't think I'll ever get over that, but those men, platonic, loved me, showed me how to be a woman of integrity and self-respect, and with the women in my life to this day. And I grew up, and fearlessly, I got married a third time, so. Oh, it's important to know the second husband, when he got out of jail, he was out, he wanted to kill me. And trust me, I had an unexpired restraining order, so kind of like the law was on my side. So during that time period, I was on the run. I had a pickup truck, and I could be packed and gone in 10 minutes. I got used to guns. I don't like guns, but they made sure I knew how to use it. So I had a .38 I was comfortable with, hollow point bullets. And they told me, you point that gun, you better shoot it. Center mass. Because my ex-husband, it took a SWAT team to take his ass down. It took them 4 hours to get him. Because I swear to God, he was a devil incarnate. He was a bad alcoholic is what it was. He was really sick and he had a lot of rage and anger. But anyway, he died. My first husband died 4 years ago. And all due to alcoholism and drugs. Now with the third husband, I wasn't looking. He was stalking me, so to speak, so I believed him. I had all my girlfriends, there's red flags, oh no, 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 I'll fix him. Thank God, I'm done. And this was about maybe 4 or 5 years ago. It's like, you know what, you need to get serious. And Bruce is the one who helped me through and really delve through the stuff. Because he met Rob, because we had moved up to Asheville, and we'd go up there, and he was like, I said, I don't know how to get out of this situation. I get myself in some predicaments. Because I never felt that I was enough, or that I could stand on my own 2 feet. I always felt like I needed a man. to be enough and to be protected and to be taken care of. And then in reality, I was taking care of them. And I was the one who was working. It's like, wait a minute, something's wrong here. Anyway, I finally something clicked and I started doing work and I had to go to other 12-step programs to really delve more into the patterns as to why I did what I did and all of this. And I got to tell you, the work, no matter how painful it was so worth it because I am free. And I tell you, it doesn't matter what people say or think about me today. What matters is what I think about them and say. And I've learned so much. I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, it actually came to the point, it's like, whatever happened in the past, it doesn't even matter. I just share that for those of you out there that are struggling and to know that you're not alone. Because I know some people that are just alcoholics. They came from the perfect family. They have their college degrees. They're just, all it was alcohol. Okay, that's all well and good. But there's some of us that have been traumatized. You know, and we got to deal with this. And don't just fluff it and say, get over it. And I've learned today not to react anymore. I used to be so reactive. Somebody's on the phone. Anyway, I learned not to be reactive anymore and not to take a whole bunch of other people's stuff personal. Because I don't have that kind of power. And I literally have learned to just stay right in the day. What can I do today? I don't fantasize anymore about what the future is going to look like or what I want. When I came back to Florida earlier this year, I had the plan of what I was going to do. Nothing worked out. And literally, I had to get down on my knees with the step three and say, okay, that's it. I surrender. I really thought I heard you tell me, come back home. I have. Nothing's working out. And I'm scared. But you know what? I trust you and I'm going to let it go. Well, guess what? Everything worked out within like a 4-day period. And it's like, I think God knows better what's best for me than I do. So I kind of keep on that mindset as best as I can. Sometimes I kind of get a little screwy, but that's okay. And the only thing is I know too is I get active in AA. I go to meetings every day. Blind Pass is my home group, has been since 2004. And Monday Night Speakers Group is my home group. And it's service and giving away and going on speaking commitments and listening and holding space for people and not judging. Because everybody's got a journey. And I've been on a journey, trust me. And I've only just given the tip of the iceberg with certain things. There's a whole lot of stuff in there. And I'm a miracle because I'm alive. And I think I'm healthy. I know I need to quit smoking. That was a tough one. But I know I need to quit, and I will. And I have to give it to God. But that's another fight. But that's another program. God, they got 12-step programs for everything. That's why sometimes that's out of the poster child. But I can laugh today. And pain is okay. And it's really, you know, I guess it was 2030, it was a couple days before Christmas. Every year, I think since, 1999 or 2000, Mary Beth, Jimmy Marino, when he was alive, there was a group of them that we'd get together, and we would meet at someone's house, and we would just do the ceremony with the 12 steps. And I went this year, and it was really healing because we're all still grieving, but yet we were all able to come together and just kind of put it into perspective, if that makes any sense. And it was a really good feel. It's hard because when in AA, I finally learned how to love. Because y'all taught me how you loved me until I could love myself. And now I really know how to love. Wow. And then you get bonded with these people. And then they love and then they die. Well, that's part of life, right? But still, it hurts. And then when you spend a long time with each other, there's all these memories. So as I'm driving through Pinellas County, going on the beach, Fort DeSoto. In fact, Mary Beth and I were talking on our way over. Lori and Dave's daughter, she was about 3 years old. We had the boat. We went out at Singer Island, and he got this huge treasure chest. And this is what sobriety gives you. Filled it up with all kinds of jewelry and coins and everything. And he had the map. And so we get off the boat. We're on the island. I said, Lori, come on, let's go get some shells. Let's just leave Daddy alone. He goes around, buries the treasure, comes back all excited. That's what sobriety does. Be a kid, have fun, bring joy. And that's what I learned. And that's just one of thousands of wonderful memories I've had. And I've had a lot of pain in sobriety too. But I've learned to just feel and just go with it. And a lot of times, usually when I'm disturbed, it's something within me that I'm either guilty of or could be guilty of or I've done or could do. So it's not up to me to judge somebody else and not take it personal. So when they always say, if you get upset or pissed off at somebody, there's three fingers pointing back at you and you need to take a look in the mirror and let it go. Learning how to let go, step three, was hard. I'd be like a cat holding on. I know what's best because that was my survival technique. If I let go when I was a kid, I don't know if I would have survived. I had to do what I had to do to live. And then step four, the first step four I did, it was 25 questions. They called it the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Didn't even know that. It took me like 2 months to do it. Didn't help at all. When I finally did the fourth step out of the big book, oh, I could see the pattern. Oh, that's why I did what I did. Oh, that's why. So once I could see that, I was like, okay. And I had to do the eighth step. I'm going to look at my character defects, of course. But when I did the eighth step, it's just a list. So I could write out all this thing. So by the time I had to do my ninth step, I was real clear. I do not like making amends. So when I've made my amends, I make sure I know exactly what I did, why I did it, and to whom, and all that, and then I come clean, and then that's it.
Yeah, you can put it like on your back.
10th step just keeps me reminding me, and I just keep taking a look each day, like what's going on, what happened,
you
know,
are you
looking at this? But do I do it perfectly every day? No, I'm living life. And actually, AA, the 12 steps, are living me. And it's become my way of life, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. And I'm living on borrowed time.
Yeah, buddy. Thank
and I'm
you.
Grateful for that. So when things get a little harder, if I start feeling sorry for myself, I remind myself of that. And I guess because I've had so many, I mean, it was like five people that were key in my life that died in 6 months. That was my two older brothers, Shoeless, Brian, and then Bruce. And when Bruce died, that was it. I literally lost my mind. Last year, I just lost it. I said, in sobriety, I was like, oof, I can't do this. And then, of course, my mother died, too. And when my mother died, I was clear with that because I spent time with her and I was okay. And I forgave her. But the most important thing was that she admitted that she knew what had happened. And she asked me to forgive her. Do you know how much freedom that was for me? Wow. And so when I got on the plane and left California and I came back, I was like, if she were to die that day, I'd be okay. And not out of hatred, not out of remorse, I'd be okay. So when they called me and they told me that she had died, I shed a couple of tears. And this is going to sound crazy, but I felt free. I felt free. And my life is just taking off. How it's going to end up, I have no idea. I'm staying with one of my friends that I've known for years. The whole house is under construction that we are doing. I have kitchen cabinets in the living room. Her brother comes over, and I'm like, oh, God. I just want my coffee. We have a makeshift kitchen right now. So I think by the end of the week, we might have a working kitchen. But if not, that's okay. Because AA taught me how to be flexible, how to be grateful. And just do the next right thing. And I think I'm talked out because I might start rambling. So I thank you for listening. And you guys are welcome.